What's up, my warped realtors? On this episode of the Warped Reality Podcast, we will talk of a possessed family, a Nevada UFO sighting, haunted eBay, another listener-submitted story, and much, much more. So let's exercise your boredom.
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode two of the Warped Reality Podcast. I'm your host, Ghost Joe. I'm so glad to be back doing this, guys. I enjoy sharing my enthusiasm of the paranormal, educating and learning about all aspects of it as well. So it's around mid-August as I'm recording this, which means the summer is almost over. I know. Although that's sad, it brings most of us paranormal junkies into our favorite season, spooky season. I can't wait to start working on episodes related to all things Halloween, scary and creepy. I mean, I guess I try to do that all year round, but it's extra special in spooky season. Anyway, let's get this show underway with some UFO news. So on May 1st of this year, Las Vegas police received a 911 call from a family that claims a UFO crashed into their backyard and that they had seen non-human creatures around it. The caller stated that as he, his brother, and his father were working on their truck, they heard a large crash and felt some type of energy. He says, "We just see in the corner of our eye something fall down from the sky, and it was with lights, and when it hit down, there was like a big impact, and we felt like an energy. And then we hear like a lot of footsteps." There's a lot of likes in there. Like a lot of footsteps near us. And then we have like big equipment, and we see there's like an 8-foot person beside it, and another one's inside, and it has big eyes, and it's looking at us. The caller tells the 911 dispatcher all this. "They're very large. They're like 8 feet, 9 feet, 10 foot. He goes on to say that he feels that they are 100% not human. Once the officers arrived, they did an investigation, finding nothing. They closed the case, calling it unfounded. There was a body cam footage of the officer questioning someone, where he goes on to say that his partner had also seen something fall from the sky. As he is questioning the other neighbors, he says that the witnesses describe the beings as 8 to 10 feet tall, big glowing eyes, green with no clothing on. The police actually set up cameras in the person's backyard to try and catch it on camera if it happens to return." So where could these aliens be coming from? Anna Lobo, an astrophysicist from the University of California, seems to think that they may be hiding in what's called terminal zones. So you know how the Earth rotates, right? And that causes us to have day and night. Well, these terminal zones are the border between light and dark halves of an exoplanet. She goes on to say, "These planets have a permanent day side and a permanent night side. And while the resources may not support life for us, it may be where these other beings are calling home." Miss Lobo goes on to say, "We are trying to draw attention to the more water-limited planets, which, despite not having widespread oceans, could have lakes or other smaller bodies of liquid water. And these climates could actually be very promising." I wonder what our resident UFOologist, John Wright, thinks about all that. So now let's check in with our favorite horror freak, Edgegrave Dave, on his review of the original Sleepaway Camp.
Horrible reviews with Edgegrave Dave.
Hey, what's up, Grave Diggers? Edgegrave Dave is here. You know, just the other day I was talking with Ghost Joe, and he reminded me of something. It's been 40 years since 1983. Huh. In a year where Stephen King made not one, two, but three movies in movie adaptions of both Cujo, Christine, and The Dead Zone, well, we even had things like He-Man and U2's Sunday Bloody Sunday, even Fraggle Rock. He reminded me that it's time to pack our bags and talk about a movie. A movie called Sleepaway Camp, 1983. So pack your bags, grave sleepers. Here we go. And in the spirit of the horrible review section of my crypt, I'm going to give you a blood-gurgling grave warning. There will be spoilers. Oh, hell yeah. There's going to be a ton of them. Because I got to tell you, we're going to cover quite a bit of ground here. Now, I do have a confession to make. I'm going to break one cardinal rule that a reviewer should never do. Something that Ghost Show might not even know. Back when I was 18 years old, I did see the movie Sleepaway Camp. I used to have kind of what you can call a little blockbuster soirees. Well, nothing that freaking fancy. I used to rent movies, invite people over. People can bring a beverage of choice. And no, it wasn't that long ago where the drinking age was 18. We would sit around and watch freaking movies, ladies and gents. And I gotta tell you, the reason why I'm saying that I'm breaking that rule, I was never all that impressed by Sleepaway Camp. I said it. In a year where one of the 2 years that there was not a Friday the 13th movie, 1983 produced the movie Sleepaway Camp, which did take place in a slasher camp backdrop setting. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that I will not review this in a judgment-free, bipartisan way, but I got to tell you, this one was just a little bit tough for me. And I know that it's a cult classic. I know that some of you out there freaking love this goddamn movie, so I want to give it justice. And justice for all. Yeah, I had to plug that one in just so Metallica for two nights at MetLife Stadium for anybody that's on the East Coast. I still love that band just as much as I do to this day. And yeah, in 1983, they had their debut album, Kill 'Em All. But we're not here to talk about Kill 'Em All. We're here to talk about the killing people in the movie Sleepaway Camp. Here we go. Now, while we're not here to talk about the sequels, one of the things that I noticed immediately as a kid going to the video store when I would try to rent every horror film from A to Z was in Sleepaway Camp 2, the movie poster or cover showed a teenage girl with a backpack that had a Freddy glove and Jason-style hockey mask sticking out of it. I was always like, what the hell? What is this all about? And I always meant to watch, but as I said, I did not have the chance years later. Let's get some of the facts straight here and right out of the way. This was written and directed by Robert Kotick, who this is the only series of films that he's actually done. He is actually a partner of a New York City law firm right now. That's what he's doing. This is starring Felissa Rose, and this has Catherine Cammy. Also, Mike Kellen. This is the final screen role for him. Now, let's talk about Mike Kellen for just 1 second. This is a very famous actor, guys. He did all kinds of things. He debuted in Broadway in 1949 with At War with the Army, okay? He was also in the famous movie with Steve McQueen, Hell is for Heroes. He was even in Gunsmoke, Twilight Zone, and even the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. I mean, there's just so much that he had done. And many of those films were in black and white, okay? So at the time, this was his final appearance. Now, also going back to the whole parody thing of what I saw in Sleepaway Camp 2's poster, one of the reasons why I may have disregarded it was, you know, parodies, especially in horror, maybe even up until Scream and, you know, being a mainstream movie, wasn't really done very much. I mean, maybe if you go back to things like Abbott and Costello in the silver screen age, where it was sort of, you know, having some comedic elements and poking fun at Dracula and Frankenstein, stuff like that. But up until this point, that hasn't been done. So moving right along, we're going to camp. Now, as we head into the movie, 1983 was one of only 2 years in the 1980s decade to not spawn a Friday the 13th film. And those 2 years were both 1983 and 1987. But we sure as hell do know that 1983 did spawn a slasher film with the backdrop of the camp setting in Sleepaway Camp. So getting right to the plot, which starts out interesting enough, you have a father and his two kids, a boy and a girl, that are playing in a lake. And then all of a sudden, boom, out of nowhere, a speedboat comes with these two idiot teens that aren't paying any attention. And they drive right over the father and his son and kills them instantly, rips them to shreds. It's like a combination of Jaws and a monster truck. Wipe them out. Now we fast forward. 8 years later, there's a strong focus on a teenage girl named Angela. She's catatonic almost and socially awkward, you know, kind of like an outsider. And you're wondering to yourself, how does this correlate to the events of the movie that I just witnessed previously? And all while this is going on, there's so much focus on what the 1980s thought that teenage life was like. And boy, was there some over-the-top acting. I mean, you have her aunt, which is like, oh, I made this for you and I packed your bag. And then you have these like sleazeball chefs and this kind of tough guy owner and these over-sexualized teenagers. And so much of the focus is just sort of happening on this sort of, you know, stuff, on this life of this back and forth of people talking to each other and all these, you know, teenage things. Oh, yeah. And don't forget, there are a couple of sporadic murders that are happening during the film in between every now and again. I wish that there was more of them, actually. And part of maybe why, and I believe me, I try to say this with an unbiased opinion in this review, but maybe why there were a lot of early critic comparisons to Friday the 13th is that a lot of the pace and the kills and the tone of the movie was a lot like Friday the 13th. But the kills are sort of what I have an issue with the most. It seems like there was a lot of focus on off-screen killing, and then you see the body. As a matter of fact, the special effects artist in an interview years later commented that he wished that they could have looked a little bit more real, you know, a little bit realistic. And I sort of do agree with that, because a lot of the bodies that you see what has happened to them. An example of this boy has to take a wicked dump, and while he's sitting in there trapped and can't get out of the bathroom stall, the killer has a beehive and bees are flowing out of there. He's kind of shooing them away. And then all of a sudden the camera cuts to his dead corpse. And believe me, the bees sure made a hive out of his flesh. Then you have this one boy that drowns and he gets pushed down for about a minute. Several minutes later in the film, you do see his body, and a snake is flown right through his face. It's not quite a skull yet, but that was actually pretty cool. You know, you have shower scene stabbings are kind of commonplace in slasher films. Well, this one, you do see the knife and a hand going crazy with blood dripping off of it, and then it shoots right to the girl screaming, going, ah! And it's like the two scenes just don't really match up in a way. It's almost like two different things. I'm almost wondering if they were filmed at two different times. And let's not forget about the heated hair tool, that clipper, that this girl's face is being smothered with a pillow. And you see her hands rising up in a shadowy silhouette while she's getting killed and screaming. She's either burned or stabbed through some orifice of her body. You're not quite sure, you know, when or how. But I gotta tell you, the twist ending is worth the price of admission, ladies and gents. And when you see that there is full frontal nudity for about a minute or two, that, my friends, is a horror show all in itself, screaming like a feral animal. It's like, what? It's like you have this whole movie that's kind of going on, and you see these scenes of, you know, teenage life and games, and then it's like, why? It's like, why did they have to sort of like include this? And it does make it different, you know, but that's the real horror show, guys. And I have to tell you, if I respect one thing about this movie, it's the fact that, you know, showing transsexual topics, and also the father happened to be gay. You don't know whether his lover was his boyfriend or husband. It's very commonplace today. But back in the 1980s, this was just a topic that was not really discussed. So it really was ahead of its time in that regard. But overall, you're just kind of waiting for stuff to happen. And when it does, you're like, okay. You know, not as realistic as real life. But then again, why the hell else would we watch these things, right? And the movie does have an interesting share of advertisement. I mean, I saw Pepsi, I saw M&M's, I mean, that's probably what the actual camp canteen actually had at the time. So, you know, being in a real camp, there's something else that I do want to mention. And before I give it the Edgegrave Dave rating system, here's one thing that's always bothered me about some of these seasonal and holiday type movies. If you're gonna have a movie that takes place in a summer camp, I wish it would look like the fucking summer, okay? And the reason why I say that is I'm looking at fall foliage. I'm also looking at all kinds of things that are really drawn out. I'm seeing at least 3 to 5 minutes of a baseball game being played. How it adds to the plot, I have no idea why. I also see volleyball. There's also a color war with a flag grab type game. I mean, it's kind of like watching horror ESPN, and there's no commentary, and there's sure as hell no winner. So maybe what you can do is pop in the movie, watch the opening sequence, hit the pause button, grab Friday the 13th Part 1, watch about 75% of it up until the killer is revealed to be Jason's mother, hit the pause button again, and then watch the ending sequence of Sleepaway Camp. And there you go. No, that would be just a little bit cruel, guys. But honestly, I do rate this one probably about a 3 to 3.5 graves out of 5. And the reason why I say that is just because it might not be my cinematic camp that I wish to attend. I could definitely see why it has a cult following. It's definitely a movie where for certain scenes, it is really fun and it's interesting to see. And I could absolutely see how in the golden age of 80s horror, how it could have spawned sequels. So for those of you that enjoy it, continue to. It's definitely something that I could see being played each and every summer, and enjoy that. And hey guys, just want to thank everybody for listening and hope you packed your bags, Ghost Show. Edge Grave out.
So thanks for that awesome review, my friend. Well, by the way, thank you for plugging the fact that you saw Metallica twice. And, you know, my job sucks because I get no time at all. And I wish I would have been able. I haven't seen a concert in years, guys. And it depresses me a lot because I used to love going to concerts. And it's always a fun time. And this one would have been great because they had a lot of great acts there. But again, like Edgegrave said, we're not here to talk about music. I may do a music podcast. If you guys think that's a cool idea, let me know. And but that, wow, 40 years. I believe Dave and I had actually seen Sleepaway Camp together, unless he actually saw it without me and was pretending to see it for the first time with me. I was unaware that he wasn't too fond of it. Yes, the acting is atrocious. It is. And it is kind of slow moving and maybe a little bit of a struggle to get through. But the last scene is worth it. You can actually have a cameo video made by Angela herself, Felissa Rose, and she does the face. If you know, you know. And you'll have to see this cult classic if you don't know what I'm talking about. So now let's talk about a case. By the way, you guys know, for some reason, I enjoy talking about demonic possession and so on and so forth. So let's talk about a case I was very unaware of. And this one's called the Ammons Exorcisms. So in November 2011, Latoya Ammons and her 3 children moved into a rental home on Carolina Street in Gary, Indiana. Not too long after they moved in, they were having an infestation of large black flies in their screened-in porch, which was odd obviously in December. They kept killing them, but they would keep coming back. That was just the beginning of a long and very terrifying ordeal that included the 12-year-old daughter levitating over her bed with many onlookers. All 3 children, ages 7, 9, and 12, repeatedly become possessed, where they would have evil grins and spoke in deep voices of death and carnage. A clairvoyant had told them that the house is plagued with over 200 demons, and Latoya was told to build an altar in her basement, which she obliged. Her and her mother, Rosa Campbell, had performed prayer and cleansing, but it seemed to make the entities more angry. The young children were violently thrown into walls. Eventually, DCS was called and an investigation was launched. Agent Washington, assigned to the family, was conducting an interview with the 7 and 9-year-old sons when the 7-year-old began growling and clamped his hands around the 9-year-old's throat. Later that evening, Washington and registered nurse Willie Lee Walker, brought the two boys into a small exam room for an interview. Campbell joined them. The seven-year-old stared into his brother's eyes and began to growl again. "It's time to die," the boy said in a deep, unnatural voice. "I will kill you." While the youngest boy spoke, the older brother started headbutting Campbell in the stomach. Campbell grabbed her grandson's hands and started praying. According to Washington's original DCS report, an account corroborated by Walker, the nurse, the nine-year-old had a weird grin and walked backwards up a wall to the ceiling. He then flipped over Campbell, landing on his feet. He never let go of his grandmother's hands. He walked up the wall, flipped over her, and stood there, Walker told the Star. There is so much more to this story that I could possibly do an entire episode on it. Officers had investigated the residence where their equipment malfunctioned and batteries depleted very quick, even though they were brand new. A few exorcisms were conducted along with some rituals, but it wasn't until they moved out and found a new house that all had stopped. The landlord of the property said that there were never any problems, demonic or otherwise, before or after Ammons were there. So, what do you guys think? Did this really happen? I mean, sometimes I think my wife and kids are possessed, but with all the levitations, head spinning, and projectile vomiting we experience, sometimes things aren't as they seem. I'll link the article that goes into more detail of this story in my show notes. It's pretty interesting, and I'm sure you guys would get a kick out of it. So now let's get on to some Cryptid Corner. This week, we're going to be talking about the Big Muddy Monster. So this Bigfoot-like creature's first appearance came on June 25th, 1973, in Murfreesboro, Illinois, by a young couple who were parked in the car near the boat deck of the Big Muddy River. As they were conversating, they heard two very loud screeching roars close to the car. Then they saw the beast, a 7-foot light-colored hairy gorilla-like creature, wet and muddy. They would also smell a smell also emanated from him, which is a very common trait of Bigfoots, big feet, those things. The police were alerted, and when they searched the area, they did find tracks in the mud, which were around 3 to 4 inches deep, 10 to 12 inches long, and 3 inches wide. The officers even heard a scream while investigating that night. They had also noticed a slimy, smelly substance on numerous tree branches around the area. There was also a case from the 50s of a man who claimed to have seen a similar biped, which he was gardening when he was gardening. The day after the 1973 encounter, though, a woman claimed that her daughter and boyfriend had seen the creature in a field behind their house. A police dog picked up a scent in the barn but refused to enter it. The police found nothing when they checked it out, but had gotten a better description, at least, of the 7-foot-tall, 300-pound, pale, dirty white creature standing on 2 feet. A few days later, on July 7th, a carnival owner claimed to have seen a similar beast, observing the carnival ponies, who were quite disturbed. He didn't make the report until after the carnival to not alert his bank account, the carnival goers. A few months had passed. Then a trucker had reported a sighting of the Muddy Monster near the Mississippi River, which was the last anyone had seen of him. Lauren Coleman, known as the world's best cryptozoologist, which I've been trying to get in touch with so I could do an interview, but he hasn't returned any of my emails, investigated these claims and stated that although the reports seemed a little aggressive, he feels that this goes along with many of the Bigfoot sightings throughout the country. There were a few sightings during the Big Muddy Monster's brief stay at Murfreesboro, but it appears that he may have just been passing through, possibly to get to Hollywood for his next big break. So, now let's read a listener submission by Linda. My daughter was told that she would never have children by the hospital consultant after endless tests over the years, which confirmed this diagnosis. Over the years, I have prayed for a miracle. Fast forward to autumn 2021, my daughter suddenly made a surprise announcement that at the age of 39, she was pregnant. Congratulations. To say there were lots of happy tears is an understatement. The next day, I was upstairs making the beds, and in my head, I said, thank you so much to my relatives in spirit for making this possible. I came downstairs to prepare lunch and instructed Alexa to play some music. It played the first song, then started to play the second song when it stopped as if it had been instructed to do so. Then a man's voice clearly said, "You're welcome." And then the song began to play again. I stood in absolute disbelief for a minute, but I live in a haunted house anyway, so I guess anything is possible. My daughter delivered the most beautiful baby girl the following year. That was an awesome story, Linda. I totally believe in that because I've had similar experiences to that where departed loved ones reach out for a quick moment. Thank you so, so much. And if you guys have a paranormal experience that you'd like to share, you could email it to me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com or leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744. And now it's time for some haunted eBay. So the first item we have is Authentic Haunted, the Lady in White Supernatural Haunted Cursed Bridgewood. And it's going for $325, but it's free shipping and it's coming from Nampa, Idaho. The description says, personally obtained item from the haunted bridge the Lady in White hanged herself from. The EMF meter was super active while obtaining the item and remains active. The local lore and legend say that when you park on the bridge at night, you can see the dead woman's shadow appear on the bridge. The bridge is constructed of iron and wood. The piece offered here is a wooden, authentic, original building material of the bridge. The thing with this is, you know, every town has an Elm Street, right? Almost every town has a local legend of a lady in white. Let's not forget that this person just admitted to committing a crime, destruction of property. That's quite a lot of money for a 6-inch piece of wood, but I guess it's not the size of it that matters, right? Right? So, and anyway, next item. Let's move on, shall we? Next item is the haunted antique candle lamp, and it's going for $9,000 with free shipping from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Looking for a special kind of magic that comes with a bit of haunting twist? Look no further than this haunted lamp. Legend has it that this lamp was once owned by a powerful sorcerer who imbued it with the ability to grant wishes. But with great power comes a great price, and the sorcerer's dark intentions led to a curse being placed upon the lamp, trapping the genie inside and unleashing a malevolent presence that has lingered there ever since. Now, this lamp is said to be haunted by the angry spirit of the sorcerer, who seeks to wreak havoc on anyone who dares to rub the lamp and release the genie within. But for those brave enough to take the risk, the wishes granted by this lamp have the potential to be more powerful than any other. All you need to do is light the candle. If you're looking for a one-of-a-kind piece of decor that comes with the story to chill your bones, this haunted lamp is the perfect choice. With its menacing aura and storied past, the lamp is sure to be a conversation starter that will have your guests talking for years to come. Just be careful what you wish for. My great-grandfather was Lebanese, and he left the country and brought this with other belongings to the Dominican Republic. My mother grew up with her grandparents as her father passed when she was 10, and her mother could barely take care of 10 children on her own as a seamstress. My grandfather buried it and only told my mom where they were before he had passed. So what do you guys think? You think, the haunted lamp is a thing? I mean, it's $9,000. You would think that if it's so horrible and haunted and crazy, you wouldn't be charging that much money to get rid of it. But, I digress. So the last item of haunted eBay is haunted, highly active, antique, heavily distressed doctor bag. And it's going for $2,500. The shipping is $83.30 from Clarksville, Maryland. Haunted, highly active, antique, heavily distressed doctor bag. This doctor bag I would call Ernest. You're naming a doctor bag, okay? First time I opened him up to inspect, within minutes of feeling a presence ascend, my young kids ran out of their room to say that our home was haunted. They had both seen firsthand a shut door open slowly. There have also been light switches turned on, whispers heard, fast bursts of air go past me. maybe also good luck. I've had four things that I had been trying to complete in three, four years, and all of a sudden, in the last couple of days, happened without warning. I have it locked in a box. Please bid if you have a safe place to store the bag in. Buy with caution. My aura and that of my home might be different from yours. So, again, like I always say, if you guys choose to bid on any of these things, Ghost Joe and the Warped Reality Podcast are not responsible for anything paranormal that does or does not happen. But, you know, if you'd like to, happy bidding. And if you do actually happen to get a haunted item on eBay, please let me know your experiences with it. You know, call me 845-600-0744 and leave me a voicemail. Well, that's going to do it for season 3, episode 2. Thank you so much for listening. And if you liked what you heard, please leave me a review and tell your friends all about it. I would greatly appreciate that. Thanks to Edgegrave Dave, John Wright, our artist Steve Santarpia, and Lisa Fletcher for your contributions to this episode. And I'll see you next time. Stay spooky. Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. And thank you to all my guests and contributors that help make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you would like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or warpedrealitypodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your thoughts.